Turuntuset tulee Joonael.
And today we are going to talk about purchasing. And just to introduce the topic briefly, I think that there are very many companies who do not understand that to increase the profit, the easiest way is to push the purchasing part, not the sales part. So let's start from the very, very beginning. How can purchasing influence profit?
Well, I think for most businesses involved in buying and selling, whether they're business to business or business to direct customer, the biggest single cost that they have is the product that they sell. If we start by assuming that we really understand all the different items that go into the cost of a product, this should include all their import duties if we are in the international trade. We need to cover raw materials, labour, shipping, finishing, packaging, basically everything involved in getting the product ready for sale. If we don't have this right, then the rest of the conversation is on a very shaky foundation. But let's go on and explore what happens if we make that cost item a little bit better for us. Any reduction in the cost of a product can either go straight to the bottom line as an improvement in profit, or could be shared with a customer in order to offer a better price. This is great if you can have a price advantage over competitors that you can then advertise and use as a lever to increase sales volume. Small improvements in purchasing can add to a very big improvements in profitability. For example, if we took a fictitious company with sales of €1 million and a 50% gross margin, we make, say, a 3% improvement in purchasing efficiency, so our cost of goods moves from 500,000, 50% of 1 million, down to 485,000. It's just 15,000 euro saving, or 3% improvement. That would give a 12.5% increase in profitability if we assumed the same cost base, working on a sort of nominal profitability of about 12% to start with.
So you have a lot of experience working both in Estonia and in UK, and you can compare both the purchasing, how it's done in UK, how it's done in Estonia. What is the biggest difference?
I think the difference is perhaps just time and maturity as a main headline. The British have been trading for a very long time, and our retail industry has been maturing for a much longer time than Estonia, which has only really had 25 years to get to grips with modern free market economics and commerce. So perhaps the British purchasers had a bit more time for a company to evolve complicated systems and procedures and operations. I think the biggest difference, if we look at a buyer or a purchasing manager, though, between a British company and an Estonian one, might be more to do with personality. To get the best out of a vendor means investing time in building up a relationship and trust, being quite open, being quite flexible. And my experience here in Estonia is that people are technically very capable, normally mathematically very capable, but if anything, struggle to make those personal, open connections that can help them to get the best out of their supplier. For example, anybody can sit down and ask for a better price from somebody in a buying and selling conversation. But if the supplier says no, you have to work with them to find a better outcome. For example, exploring why the supplier has a problem and isn't able to give you an improvement. You may need to develop an understanding of him and his business and his needs and constraints so that you can work together to strip out the cost, either through changing slightly the specification or understanding his tipping points in terms of volume, so that you can get the product that you need at the price that you're ready to pay and still leave him with some profit so that he wants to go on trading with you.
And I understand that this is what Estonian companies are not used to do. They take no as a no and instead try to change a vendor then, or what?
I think that can typically be one of the outcomes. Life here tends to be quite black and white, and we live in a small community. If somebody says no, they mean no. Whereas in international commerce, if one was sitting down particularly with Chinese, they would consider the entire process to be a negotiation right up until the point you've actually paid for and received your product. So there's no such thing as a firm no or a firm yes. It's an ongoing dialogue. And to get the best out of any relationship, you have to develop that personal connection. And that's something that perhaps takes time and a little more confidence and a little more flexibility than we in Estonia find comfortable at the very beginning. That said, many Estonian businesses have been trading successfully for a very long time. And we look at Tallinn with a port and many hundreds of years of international commerce at some different levels. So we're quite capable of it if we make that effort.
What are the main differences in the, let's say, purchasing style? You were telling that in Chinese you never get a firm no. In Estonia it can be more black and white. In UK you tend to develop the vendor in order to get the results. What are the main differences in, did I mention all, or are there any other things to mention?
Well, I think we're all different around the world. We talked about extremes between Estonia, the UK and China. One of the great things working in the fashion business has been dealing with Italian people.
Okay.
Over the years.
How are the Italians?
It doesn't work on radio, but we need to wave our hands around a great deal if we're going to do business in Italy. Things can be very, very emotional, and you can there find that you get a first response, which may be this strong no, it's impossible. But again, if you've developed this relationship and you can discuss and understand the supplier's issues, you may still be able to get from an absolute no, it's impossible, to getting the outcome that you needed. I could give an example there from my time with Baltica.
Okay.
So perhaps imagine that our designers have come up in this fashion business with a beautiful design for a floral print dress. They've already chosen the colours and the design, and we know exactly how it should look and feel. But when the purchasing team sit down to work out the costing, everything turns out to be far more expensive than we can afford if we're going to make a reasonable profit. But sitting down with our emotional Italian supplier and starting to calmly explore what the causes and problems might be, we could get to a profitable outcome through a series of different possibilities. For example, when printing, we could print a design digitally instead of on traditional rotary machines. This will cost more money per meter, but we might be able to get the exact amount of fabric that we need instead of having to produce and not use many hundreds of meters of print. In the end, we will, as the buyer, pay for all the supplier's wastage one way or another. We might be able to change the weight of the fabric in order to take cost out for the supplier. This enables him to give us a lower price and still make a living. We might be able to adjust the composition of a fabric using a slightly less expensive yarn in order to get the price down. We might be able to understand that the supplier has a very similar fabric already in stock that he needs to clear, and we could take that fabric and put our print on it and get exactly the same result. So we end up with this beautiful floral dress that we wanted in the first place at a price that we can afford. The supplier's still making a living, and we can all move on happily. The customer gets the great dress in the store to buy that the designer envisaged in the first place. But we only get there if we have a relationship that gets us past this absolutely emotional, impossible no that may well be the first answer.
Does it mean that with Italians you always start with emotional no? Or does it help when you have once kind of managed the process and then there is a bit more trust already that it's not so firm no afterwards?
Everything is easier the second time.
Okay.
But whether it's an emotional no or a calm no, we need to try and explore how to get where we need to be. And like so much of life, it's about understanding the other person's position. We may not be able to give always what they want. They may not be able to give exactly what we want. But if we can be flexible and negotiate and adjust slightly our requirement to match more closely with our partner's capability and his needs, then we should be able to reach a point where everybody is happy to go on.
In the process, how would you manage if you have hundreds and hundreds of different suppliers?
Typically, this can happen. One of the challenges there is to start by trying to thin down the supplier list. Typically, you would go through some type of review, understanding which categories of your product catalogue you buy from which partners, understanding their strengths, the dynamics of their different business models, and the sort of volume that you've spent with them in the past and the results that you've achieved. So one should always be perhaps looking at the long tail of very, very small suppliers with whom you don't do much business and asking the question whether it's better to consolidate to a smaller group. And this is a challenge because different producers of products, it doesn't matter whether it's fashion or bakery, they all have different skills. They're better at some things than others, and we want to make sure that within our supply base, our portfolio of vendors, we have all of our needs covered with a little bit of duplication in the areas where we have high volume, so that we don't place all of our eggs in one basket. But typically, if we were to edit the supply base down a little, we could be a little bit bigger with a smaller number of partners, be a little more important for them financially, and hope to have a stronger relationship going forwards.
What would be the reasonable percentage of business for a vendor from company?
The way I've typically approach this, if we assume we're talking about a reasonably large product category, is to try and make sure that we have at least three partners for a particular category. One might be, say, 50% of the volume, and this is our key partner where we expect a great price, but we favour them with a lot of business. Perhaps we have a number two who's doing another 30 or 40% of the business, just to make sure that we've spread our risk and that in peak periods we can get all the supply that we need. And it's always good to have a third or even a fourth supplier who you're trying things out with or who has some particular specialist skills that can't be so well covered by your bigger partner. And smaller companies are typically a little hungrier and a little more innovative, so it's great to keep some different sized businesses within your portfolio as well.
If I come back to the different, buying styles or selling styles or negotiating styles, then I don't know if there are any calculations, but can you say that Estonian companies, because of not having the skills of developing the vendor's business in a kind of, not in a level like is in UK, they are losing that amount of profit. Does it have a straight connection, a correlation, or would it be just hypothetical?
I'm not sure it would be that simple. And if we're talking about businesses of any scale, then there are no Estonian companies. The Estonian companies that have a bit of scale are already international in that they are buying and selling from other countries, from other people. It doesn't matter what the category is. They're already operating in an international market. And as such, they're receiving inputs from around the world. So their behaviour is already starting to become more and more internationalised. Some of the greatest people I've worked with here in Estonian commerce have had either some time living abroad, working in London or in Western Europe or the States, or have been travelling extensively in Europe or in Asia. And so as part of that experience, they're soaking up like a sponge the behaviour of all of the people that they've interacted with along the way. So this idea of a sort of small Estonian business buying and selling from Estonian people to Estonian people inside Estonia is a little bit outdated. We've moved on quite a long way from that already. And you'll see in the businesses which are growing that they're growing with an international attitude, even if right now their customers are fairly local.
if I want to get really maximum profit out of my purchasing manager or purchasing department, what would be the easiest changes to do? What should I look at and consider that probably if I do this, that, and that, then it's mostly done?
Okay. There are some basic disciplines that we need to make sure that we have in place. We talked about costs, first of all, and this is fundamental. We must understand the actual real-world cost of what we buy. This is critical to make sure that we've covered that, so we have no surprises later. After this, the biggest challenge is probably what we call demand planning. But basically, it's trying to estimate how much we're going to consume or sell of the products that the purchasing manager is responsible for buying. We can do this in very, very complicated ways with expensive IT systems, or we could start with something very simple, which is that those people who buy should start by listening to those people who sell, because those who sell are normally in the most direct contact with our final customer and should be quite well able to brief us on the sorts of things that customers are looking for. Beyond this, we could do trials and tests. So before we go and buy 1,000 of something, we could try 100 first of all and see how they sell. And then based on this, we could buy more or not buy any more. And quite often not buying any more is the key to successful purchasing. We've all, in buying, had products that we wish we could have never bought. either not bought at all or bought less of them, because in the end they didn't sell the way we had hoped. And not buying is a great way to improve profit. Everybody should be using some sort of estimating tool to help them with the quantity. Whether this is a pencil, an Excel spreadsheet, or a complicated system doesn't really matter. The important thing is that within the business, the organization, we have a common understanding of what we expect to sell, and that we never, ever, ever buy a bigger quantity than we expect to sell in a sensible period of time.
Communication, managing the quantities, anything else?
I think within the quantities, the other thing, perhaps we always concentrate on looking at buyers who've bought too much of something or wish they hadn't bought something. But buying too few can have an even worse impact. Imagine that we run a campaign, so we whip up the customers into a frenzy of expectation that they're going to come to our store or our website and find this great product. We've got them all excited by it, and we didn't buy enough pieces of it, so we run out, leading to missed sales, unhappy customers, and then they go and look somewhere else for the product that you've spent so much time and money in marketing to them. This is very, very dangerous territory, and it's really the purchasing manager's job to maintain the balance between understanding the likely demand and the quantities that they buy in. We can mitigate this through lots of different systems. We can try and test products. We may even be able to use innovative business models or get somebody else to provide the stock through a concession or a realization method, perhaps for something which is not core to our everyday business, but a sort of side product category or a new product category. We may be able to get the vendor to put product into our business at his risk, and we only sell it when we've sold it. We divide the profit margin between us and him. In the end, you might pay a little more for this, but if you don't need to buy anything and you don't need to take the risks up front, it could be quite profitable.
Excellent. What are the more complicated ways? Let's say that you as a consultant sometimes draw a list that these are the things that could be done in order to improve your profitability from purchasing side. And then there are the last three issues that you say that, okay, first of all, get your quantities right, try to understand what sells and so on. And then you come to the deeper part that needs to probably have a lot of changes or has something that people don't want to do or don't want to follow.
Something that people don't want to do sounds like an imported IT system that doesn't suit the needs of the business. But I think consultants and business system software sellers will typically try and describe very complicated solutions, because this is how we manage to write invoices to businesses and how consultants and IT companies make a living. But typically, we should start with some of the simpler disciplines that we've covered already, which is about understanding cost, trying to understand the likely demand for a product, and trying to get our quantities to align with that. Business systems can help us with complicated comparisons, but if we're relatively small, we may be able to manage this ourselves, either using manual systems or something like Excel. We would describe, for example, product attributes. Complicated merchandise control systems allow us to describe every item that we have within our inventory that we plan to sell, to describe product attributes in a number of complicated ways. But basically, what we would be trying to do if we implemented this type of system is to find ways of identifying similar items. For example, if we had a pen, we could describe it as having a retractable nib, like this one you can hear. We could describe it as having a clip or a lid. We could describe it as having blue, red, or black ink. We could describe it as being a biro or a fountain pen. And if we were trying to estimate how much we might sell of some new pen, we could look at the sales history of similar pens in the past and try and understand whether this new pen at this particular price point is likely to behave in a way that is similar to a blue pen that we sold last year. So trying to demystify things, and instead of looking at every product as being new and unique, but trying to compare it to something about which we already have an experience, would help. And you don't need to buy a fancy system to do this. You need to apply a mental process. Other complicated things could be lean techniques. We talk a lot in the media today about lean production and Kaizen and how we should be turning our inventory incredibly quickly by knitting supply chain together in ever closer relationships. But again, this is really about relationships between buyer and seller. It's not about having an overly complicated IT system or an overly complicated working method. It's about trying to cement the relationship so that the buyer can get the product that they want from the seller as quickly as possible, at the lowest price possible, and with the minimum amount of risk. We can make it more or less complicated depending on our budget for investment, but the principle is the same.
Absolutely. I also wanted to ask about the connections between purchasing and sales and marketing. What do the marketing and salespeople need to know about purchasing? How much and what information is important for them?
I think probably the best place to start here would be to try and have a common understanding around the timetable, the lead times involved in buying and selling a particular product. If we have a business-to-business model, for example, it's absolutely critical that we get the sales orders from our business customers in time that we can carry out the manufacturing or our purchasing operations in an efficient way. If we got this wrong, so we received orders from our customers after the cutoff date so that we could ship goods efficiently, we would end up moving our freight operation perhaps from sea to air or air and sea combinations, which are far more expensive than pure sea freight, but obviously make up for some of the time gap that we've now burned. So the best way to avoid this type of problem is to try and make sure everyone in the organization is working together efficiently on an agreed timetable. In the fashion industry, for many years we've worked with what we call a critical path. This should cover the whole process from designing and developing products to signing off the range to making samples to manufacturing and shipping. But the target here is very simply to make sure that everybody completes all of the tasks on time so that the next people in the chain or the dependent task managers can get their work done, so the item arrives finally on time It's recognizable to everybody as the thing that we thought we were creating in the beginning, and that we've spent as little money as possible on things that don't add value to the customer. The customer in our stores doesn't need to know or see how we shipped it. They don't need to see what other versions of it we created during the development process. They just need to see a great product in their local store at the right time of year at a great price.
Very good. And the very last question is that how is the purchasing changing? What are the new trends that that really influence companies, or are there any new trends?
There are. They're mainly new developments of some of the themes we've covered already, but there are big developments around this area of integration, especially in inventory management. We talk here about more pull and less push in our supply chain. The target here again is we define pull as being a movement of stock or a manufacturing activity or an importation activity where it's driven by the customer as much as possible rather than by the business having made a decision a long time in advance and doing what we call pushing through the supply chain. More pull mechanisms might result in turning inventory faster. We call this stock turn. This can release working capital in the business, which you could use to finance other things that drive growth. Perhaps you carry a bit less inventory, save money, use that money to upgrade your website, and maybe you open some other selling points, or you give the marketing team a slightly bigger budget so that they can bring more customers. So releasing working capital through smarter inventory management is very, very desirable. Another new trend, this is especially relevant for e-tailers and catalogers, is what we call drop shipping. In this model, the seller actually holds no stock at all. A customer might see an advertisement in the newspaper or a catalog or go to a website and place their order, at which point the seller places a back-to-back order with the manufacturer or the importer of the item, who can then either deliver it to the seller or direct to the customer. So now you have the possibility to sell product that you've never even touched. And we call this drop shipping. This is great for direct marketing. It has opened up a new problem area. This is a double-edged sword. And the problem that comes with this is that perhaps the manufacturer also opens up a website and starts to sell directly to your consumers, leaving you completely cut out of the supply chain. We see this in things like Alibaba's AliExpress e-commerce site, where it's possible to buy straight from manufacturers in Asia, and they will deliver the product straight to the customer's home here in Europe, and they will cut out the logistics company, the import company, the retailer, and have an absolutely direct relationship with the customer. They don't offer any of the service or experience or backup benefits that you get from dealing with a professional retailer, but you do get perhaps a better price.
Absolutely. So it means that Estonian companies have really a lot of things to do and to think of in order to develop the business in the really international level. Is there anything else that is important that we didn't tell, but you say that, okay, I want Estonian retailers or Estonian purchasing managers to do this, and then they will be, I don't know, happy ever after?
Well, happy ever after is a big ambition, Annie.
Yeah, it is, I know.
I would say that the biggest challenge facing Estonian businesses, whether they're retailers or other selling organizations, and mainly the same ones that face the rest of the world. And this is about working together in a team to try and get everybody in the team as close as possible to the customer. This way, the customer's thought processes and behaviors and their needs and wants and the things that are exciting them can be better understood by everybody in the organization. That's probably the single biggest thing that we should try and remember if we're any kind of buying and selling business, is that in the end, we shouldn't be buying the things that appeal to us. We should be buying the things that we think appeal to the customers whom we serve. And if those two can coincide, then that's fantastic. And we see that in a lot of lifestyle businesses where perhaps the principal is really doing something that they believe in, but it matches well to a local need at the time. And then we have outcome happiness. But if we don't concentrate on working together to meet the customer's needs and to anticipate in advance what those are going to be, then we won't succeed.